70% of college graduates this year took out loans. The average college grad is paying back student loans of around $33,000. Now, those numbers can seem daunting, but my next guest sees light at the end of this tunnel. Stuart Butler is a senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institution. No doubt about it, Stuart, students and parents are really actively seeking better value for their dollars, aren't they?
Well, they certainly are, and that's one of the reasons that there's pressure now on colleges to start really demonstrating whether they're giving value for money.
And you say transparency in both the cost and the quality of higher education institutions is really an important step to lowering cost. Tell us a little more about why that is.
There's actually a lot going on in that sector along the lines of what we would call disruptive innovation. Lots of things that are happening, the advent of online education, the so-called MOOCs, massive open online courses. There's a lot happening and a lot of different business models. And so in order to navigate this and find out what actually is good value, what actually does provide the kind of education that you want or your children want, you've got to have good information. You've got to know whether a particular course, a particular university really is going to get you that job that you wanted. You've got to know whether it provides you with the kind of additional things we expect in college education, networks, introduction to all kinds of courses and professors that you would never have met, and so on. So it's a real challenge to make sure that people can actually navigate the costs and the returns in education. The higher education sector has been very good for many years at covering this up, not really giving you that kind of information.
It's very hard.
Yes, it is. And we see in other sectors like healthcare, for example, it's very hard to know that kind of information there. What we're seeing in higher education is because of the cost, because of the indebtedness, the customer is now becoming much more aggressive in wanting the kind of information that universities have not provided in the past.
So I think I hear you say this pressure is on and that universities and colleges need to be providing good, usable, accurate information.
That's right. And if they don't, then competitors will start doing that. And that's a pattern we're beginning to see as well, that there are institutions, newer institutions, more innovative institutions that are really offering that kind of information, as well as bringing the cost down dramatically, which is also what we see with new competition, technologically driven competition in the higher education sector. The cost of college degrees is coming down rapidly in that area. So you can go to places now, some prestigious institutions now, and get a $10,000 degree. And I don't mean $10,000 a year. I mean $10,000 in total.
That's stunning.
And it's going to put enormous pressure, of course, on universities and colleges, including state universities.
One of the things, as you're talking about comparison information, is, as you point out in your piece, that quality means different things to different people. So it's very subjective. And some students might want a school with an emphasis on a high-quality college life. Others may be more focused on what kind of research will I be able to do. How can we get valid comparison information considering it's so subjective?
Well, the good news is that that kind of information is becoming more available. In the old days, I think the only thing one could look at was U.S. News and World Report,
Yes. Which
would rate colleges in various ways, and it was very much based on what we would call inputs rather than whether, in fact, you did get the kind of things that you were looking for. But fortunately, there's lots of other types of consumer information that are developing, both in the newspaper sector or the journal sector like Forbes and so on, or Kiplinger's. And each of them really look at slightly different aspects of what you would consider quality. Kiplinger's, for example, focuses a lot on, you know, what is your salary likely to be, as you would expect with a financial planning journal. So it focuses more on that. There's an organization called the American Council of Trustees and Alumni, or ACTR, which focuses a lot on the broad sort of liberal arts aspect of universities and colleges. Are you going to get a rounded education? And so you can look at different scorecards, different forms of information, and depending on what kind of student you are, if you're interested in getting in and out quickly at the lowest cost and getting a good salary, well, then maybe look at Kiplinger's. If you're interested in getting the very broad idea of a university, if that's what's important to you, then look at the ACTR ratings. They rate colleges quite differently.
The final recommendation that you offer in your piece for Brookings, Stuart, is to, I love the way you put this, open up the cozy world of higher education to more competition from these institutions that have new business models. So talk a little more to us. What kinds of new models are we seeing emerge and are successful?
First of all, what's happening there is we had a system or have a system that really tries to imply quality in this country called accreditation. The University of Michigan, other universities around the country are accredited institutions. That means a body which is really federal in its form is rating organizations or at least accepting organizations, credentialing them in that way. And that's a pretty rough and ready notion of quality. And the fact is it costs a lot to get accredited. So there's been a restriction on the ability of new ventures to move into the higher education sector. What we're seeing now is a lot of really interesting institutions that are using different business models, making much greater use of technology to offer very high quality degrees, in some cases accredited, in some cases not, that compete directly with this cozy world of accredited, established, traditional, sort of sage on the stage kind of approach to higher education. And you're seeing them in various ways. For example, there's a set of universities called Western Governors Colleges in Indiana, close by to Michigan, and further west. They focus very much on looking at credentialing people and credentialing courses. And that means that if you're already pretty competent in a certain area, then you can much more easily test out of taking that class. And if you can get through the course in half a semester rather than a full semester, then you can do two courses rather than one. So they're using competency-based measures to assure quality and to offer different courses.
Rather than how much time you're in a seat.
Exactly, so-called seat time, which we all know about, and, you know, have you got enough credits, et cetera, et cetera. Then other institutions are really developing very interesting combinations of using technology, using online, using experience in the workplace, in some cases working with companies or industries to design a structure of a college degree that really fits particular lines of work or industries. For example, College for America, which is an outgrowth of the Southern New Hampshire University, has developed courses with McDonald's, with the Gulf Oil Company, with Blue Cross Healthcare, and it's really designed a package that fits those industries so that if you go through that degree, and it's a $10,000 degree, then you're much more likely to have the skills and the approaches and all the kind of courses you need to do well in those sectors. So they're working with employers. One of the big things we know in higher education is that very often people get a degree, they run up a lot of debt, and then they can't get a job in the area that, you know, they majored in. Roughly half of graduates from American universities and colleges cannot get full-time work in the area of their concentration at college. So you spend all this money and you can't actually get a job in this area.
Yeah.
So the new ventures are really focused on, you know, among other things, addressing that problem and therefore giving you much better value for money.
If you could choose only one of these three recommendations to put into place to make the biggest amount of difference, Stuart, what would it be? Which one?
I really think that breaking up the cozy world, as I put it, looking at accreditation, detaching, for example, your ability to get student aid from whether or not you go to an accredited university or college, making it much more open, that's what's really going to make a difference. Because I think the other things, the information, the new entrants, all this, it's happening anyway. We're seeing the kinds of changes moving along in higher education that we saw many years ago in telephones, in the advent of cell phones and so on. You saw it in newspapers and so on. That's going on. The thing that's holding it back in many ways is this accreditation issue. If you can't set up an institution without going through all these procedures that then end up forcing you to offer education the way it's been done for decades, then it's very hard for you to break into the market. So it's opening up the market in many ways is the most important of all, I think, in terms of getting the changes needed.
And doing your homework if you're a consumer, because we do know some of these for-profits, you might not be getting what you think you're getting in terms of an education.
That's exactly right. But I think the improvements of information are really happening anyway. That's developing, it's expanding, and so on. The thing that's still slowing everything down is this accreditation issue.
Stuart Butler is a senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institution. He's also an adjunct professor at Georgetown's McCourt School of Public Policy. Stuart, it was really great talking with you. Thank you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.